So it's Rat Run Friday today, Glenn. It's despite the weather and the pouring rain, we've still got the holidaymakers trundling past the house here. And because it's raining, the noise is even worse than usual. So if you can hear the sort of hissing of tyres and...
rush hour.
It is.
A constant rush hour in Shrieton.
Except it starts at about now and will finish, if we're lucky, at about 8, 9 o'clock tonight. So...
It might be worth just explaining to listeners what's the cause of this, because it's one of the hazards you have in living in your part of Wiltshire anyway.
Yeah, well, the hazard of living here is the A303, which everybody knows is just completely rammed most of the time, but Fridays are particularly bad as everybody heads off to their holiday homes in Cornwall or caravan in Devon or wherever it is they go. And when the A303 gets full up, which, as I say, it's all the time, they all dive off onto through the villages. And sadly, our road has become one of the main rat runs. And it's just a very narrow village street, no pavements.
If you're a regular listener of the podcast, then, if you hear these faint rumbles in the background... that's the holiday traffic using Shrieton as a rat run.
It's either that or the guns on the planes or my stomach. So, one of those.
Okay, welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast, where we talk about things in Wiltshire that are hidden, relatively speaking. My name is Glyn Coy, and I am one of the podcast hosts. I won't say what I do outside of this, because the list is too long to mention. But with me, as always, I have my trusted sidekick.
Paul Timlett, retired deck chair shifter.
An occasional bag carrier.
An occasional bag carrier.
Okay, so this is number 13.
God, I'd forgotten about that.
Yes.
Oh, keep clear of ladders.
Yeah, absolutely. Don't go walking under any ladders. And we're going to have a focus this week on the villages of Sutton Veney and Titherington, because there's plenty of stuff to talk about in these two places and the surrounding countryside. But before we do that, as usual, we're going to have a bit of a roundup over what's been going on over the last 2 weeks. And one of the things you may have noticed from the last podcast is that we now do a little bit of outside broadcasting.
Yeah, it's been great fun, isn't it? The last one on Fifield Down seems to have gone down very well with the one piece of feedback I had. I don't know if you've had any, but...
I've had two, so that's three in total. But yeah,
excellent.
But yeah, they've put the feedback's really good. And actually, it's been good for us to kind of do things a bit differently. And actually, it's better to be talking about this stuff actually physically there. So to continue with that theme, we're going to be doing a bit more of that in this podcast. So a bit later on, we'll be weaving in some recordings of us out in the field. So that's different.
So the bit of feedback I had was from my walking buddy, Stu, and he loved it. His only complaint was, what he liked was he could hear the boots sort of walking along and the birds singing. His only complaint was they weren't his boots, they were yours. Because, of course, he and I had done that Fifield Down walk a few days before we went back to record.
Yeah.
And it's great to do it because we do the outside recording in the evenings. After you've finished work, and being in some of these places at 8, 9 o'clock at night is it's so peaceful. There's nobody around. We just have these places to ourselves.
That very much so. I mean, that's what I find. I mean, the daylight, extra daylight we get at this time of year is great because you can go out for evening walks. But what you find when you do that is that often you have these places to yourself. There's not many people out and about in the evening, which is quite nice. But the other thing that we did over the last couple of weeks is we did the second Hidden Wiltshire Walk in association with Wiltshire Museum. And we actually did this Sutton Viognier and Titherington with a group of people. And it was really good, actually. It was probably on one of the hottest days. I know there's been a lot of hot days lately. But we'll talk about that as we go. And I think the next one is next week, next Wednesday.
It is, yeah. Milk Hill, isn't it?
Milk Hill. And last time I checked, there was only one ticket left. So we've got almost a full house on that one.
And that's an evening one again, isn't it?
It is. And on that one, and that will actually segue into another thing that we've done recently. But on that one, we're being joined by David Carson, who farms the land around Milk Hill and lives in the village of Alton Barnes. So it'd be great to have him as a guide.
Yeah, and of course, David, is, as he would describe himself, is an amateur archaeologist. He wouldn't claim to be a professional by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, he certainly knows that area better than most people, so it's fantastic to have him along.
Yes. we actually spent a few hours with him recently, didn't we? Because we went over to Alton Barnes, because we're collaborating with him on a future project which will be podcasty, and also there'll be some video attached to that one. But do you want to say a few words about that?
Yeah, well, it's proving a bit more complicated than we thought. What a great idea. We'll just go and David Carson can talk about the area and you know, take some photographs, and then some fool decided to that we could cut some video in as well. I can't remember whose idea that was.
Not sure about that one.
No. And this has now taken on a life of its own, such that we're having to rope in my son to do some filming for us. And it's going to be quite exciting. And filming on the ground as well as above.
Yes. So the plan on that is we'll be doing, a bit later in the summer, video, which will be covering Alton Barnes, Alton Priors and the hills above. And out of that video, we'll put it on YouTube or whatever video platforms are out there. And but also we'll be pulling the audio into a podcast in the future as well. But it's just that there was so much stuff to cover in that place and so much history that David knows that we wanted to do something a little bit special with it. So that's why we're doing things a bit differently and challenging ourselves as well, because... neither Paul or myself are video guys, but we're trying to do something that looks, well, if not professional, at least semi-professional.
But as long as
not
you don't
like
embarrass...
rank amateurs.
Yeah, as long as you don't embarrass ourselves, that's the main thing.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, no, or, we're hopeful that we'll get something good out of it.
Or more importantly, we don't embarrass David. So.
Yeah, true. So, do you want to talk about Marlborough Open Studios? Give yourself a little bit of a plug.
Well, if I must, which is why. So for those who live, I guess sort of around the centre of the county, will doubtless have seen or heard of Marlborough Open Studios, which actually Wiltshire Museums very kindly, heavily plug each year. So Marlborough Open Studios is an arts trail. So lots of artists, sculptors, photographers, we all sort of exhibit in various studios. So that is open throughout July, every weekend in July. So I've been stuck indoors for at least a week printing photographs for Marlborough Studios. So the lovely Steve Dixon, who does the music for the show, he and I and a guy called Alan Cowley, we all run a small gallery, a photographer's gallery, north of Devizes, it's in Roundway. So we are going to be exhibiting there. As I say, I think we're only open 3 weekends in July, so we're not open the last weekend. But we all print our own, or certainly Alan and I print our own photographs, and we'll be printing Steve's for him as well. But anybody who's tried that, it's a very time-consuming process, especially if you're a photographer. So anyway, I've finished now. Finished the last print yesterday evening. So they're all drying or degassing or whatever they do, digital prints these days. So I've got a sort of small window where I can get out a bit more, and then we're sort of flat out, just getting the gallery ready. But More Broughton Studios has got a website. If you want to sort of head on over there, I'll stick a link in the show notes. As I say, Wiltshire Museums also plug it pretty heavily as well. So you can get details on probably on their website, I think. But certainly it'll be in the show notes, and it'll be on my website as well. And do come along to our gallery in Roundway. It'd be good to meet a few people. And hopefully what you see won't be too disappointing.
I'm sure it'll be fantastic. Look forward to that. Anyway, so on with this week's podcast, Sutton, Veney and Titherington. Okay, so as I said before the musical interlude, we're talking this week about Sutton, Veney and Titherington. Now, this is a walk. It's on the website. We'll have a link to the walk on the show notes. And it's a write-up of a walk that's about 5.5-6 miles that I did for the first time on the last day of 2020, 31st of December. It was a New Year's Eve walk. And I remember on the day I did it, it was very frosty. And most of the downs up there and bottoms that were in shade for all of the day, they never defrosted. So there's some nice sort of photos on the website showing that, you know, very white bottoms and hills and things like that.
Stop tittering at the back there.
If you've listened to this podcast regularly, you'll know that we always get a reference to a good Wiltshire bottom. And if it's your first... First, listen to the podcast. A bottom in Wiltshire terms is a dry valley. Nothing sinister about it at all.
Or a coombe. A coombe.
So it was a great walk. And one of the things I liked about the walk is that it took in the two villages of Sutton, Veney and Titherington, both of which are really quite interesting. Very small, but picturesque. And we'll talk a bit more about that as we go. But it also went up into the hills above them. You've got some downland at the back of the villages, which is, you know, gives you, it sort of takes you up onto a ridge where you can see multiple views into quite a lot of different places that we've already covered on the Hidden Wiltshire website. The views are fantastic, but we'll talk about that.
This is one of those walks where I think in the last couple of weeks, I don't know if I've done it two or three times. I mean, you and I went up there to do some recording, and then obviously we did the Wiltshire Museum walk. And then I think when you and I did it, it suddenly dawned on me that I'd done exactly the same walk about, 10, 12 years ago with my son and daughter and a friend and her daughter. And we did it. Because we were, in those days, we used to go geocaching.
Yeah.
And there's lots of geocaches around there. But splendid walk. But it was only when we were, well, we'll come to it in a minute, but there was the bit at the beginning that I thought, oh, my God, I remember this bit. But it is just a... And I've been up there several other times just photographing as well because the views are outstanding up there. They really are. We'll come on to that.
Yeah, they are. But where we started the walk, we started just outside the church on the High Street of Sutton Veney, which is quite an interesting church in itself. It was built in the sort of 1860s, I think, because the previous church in the village was starting to collapse. And at the end of the walk, we go to that old collapsed church, and it's got some fascinating things to discuss. But this first church, one of the things I found very interesting when I first went there, and the first time I went to Sutton Veney was my son was playing football in the village. He had a football match and I went for a wander and noticed there was a sign opposite the church which said it was a Commonwealth war grave. So I went for a wander inside and discovered there was a big section of the churchyard that had something like 200 or close to 200 World War One graves, most of which were Australian, which really intrigued me. And then when I went inside the church, there was an Anzac chapel in there, and there were strong links with Australia. It turns out that in World War One, a lot of the Aussies were based in this area. There were huge camps, and sadly, many of the soldiers made it back from World War One, but were cruelly taken by Spanish flu in the year afterwards. Amongst the graves, there are five nurses who also died of it. So it's a really sad story. Just so people are aware, there is a separate article about Sutton Veney, St John's Church, and the Spanish flu on the Hidden Wiltshire website. And on that, I've got a photograph of a grave of a nurse, which has a picture by it, and her name is Fanny Tyson.
I thought it was Fanny something, yeah.
Yeah, so on the website as well, there is a sort of link. If you click on it, it will take you to her story. So it's, you know, and it's just really poignant that someone has gone out there and reconciled these graves to the individuals and the stories, and it's all documented on these external websites. And even today, there's a very strong link between Australia and Sutton Veney, because I know that on Anzac Day, they tend to do an Australian service in the church. And actually, while we were there the other weekend, there was a cricket match with the Australian High Commission taking place on the field.
That's right, yeah, there was.
It's a
pure coincidence. Certainly wasn't aware of that.
No. And the article tells you a little bit more about the Australian connection. I think it was from 1916. Sutton Veney was the home of the number one Australian command of their armed forces. And then it talks about how in January 1919, number one Australian General Hospital moved to Sutton Veney. And that's really where the whole Spanish flu link comes in. So it's a very poignant, sad story, really.
And we could have probably have done with a field hospital the day we did the walk with Wiltshire Museums. certainly at the beginning there.
That's right, because the walk takes you just off the high street. It takes you up into the hills. And the first section of the walk is it's short and sharp, but it's very steep. And we were doing it on, you know, a very, very hot afternoon. And, you know, it's... It was certainly lung-busting for about 10 minutes. At the top, I think I was feeling a bit ropey, actually. Heat stroke.
Yes, but poor Mrs. Hidden Wiltshire podcast was really struggling in the heat there. I thought she was going to go back down.
I know. And the funny thing is that we had just arrived at the walk only like 2 hours after having our second COVID jabs.
Oh, God, yes.
So I think after being both bedridden for a day after the first one, we were quite nervous about what reaction we would have. So I think she was also worried about that. And that first section, I think she was stuck at the back and thought, oh, if this is the walk, I'm done. But no, she stuck with it and actually raced on ahead after that.
But she was stuck at the back with me, who I was also suffering. It's mad, really, because we were saying on the day years ago when I was a much more active cyclist than I am now. We used to do sort of time trials up that hill. So you'd cycle from the bottom all the way up to the top, which is, I don't know, what is it, a mile and a half or something?
Yeah.
And, of course, you hit that really steep hill straight out the blocks. I mean, you're just straight into it. Then sort of, as we used to say, your nose on the front wheel because that's steep.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, God, I used to be able to cycle up here and put in a pretty decent time, and now I'm struggling to walk up it.
Yeah, I know. The funny thing is, the first time I did this walk, it was, as I've said, it was icy, and trying to slip and slide my way up that hill was a bit of a challenge.
Yeah.
It's very steep, but it's over very quickly, thankfully. And then once you're up there, the panorama starts to open up at that point. But on the right, in the distance, as you walk up that hill, you can see Cowdown, which is, I don't think it's accessible. There's no public tracks up there, but it's there's an old Iron Age settlement up on the top. And as we go through this walk, you'll discover there's quite a lot of history in the landscape around here. So as we go up the hill, we're heading towards Haycombe Hill, we guess. on the left-hand side, as the view opens up, you'll see Haycombe Bottom, which is quite picturesque in itself. And there's a couple of nice houses as you go up towards the top. But eventually the track, or the tarmac road, turns into a sort of gravel track. And then as you walk along that ridge, that's when some of the views really start to open up in quite an impressive way.
And along that track, which for those who care about these things is a restricted byway, so you can't drive up it, we reached a little stand of trees, didn't we?
And when we got to those trees, that's when we were outside and did our first bit of outside recording on this walk.
Okay, Glenn, so where the hell have you brought me now?
On another field trip.
Yeah.
As I'm saying that, we are actually standing in a field. Well, on the edge of the field.
Well, we're in a wood almost.
But yeah, yeah.
So you brought me to the woods.
Yeah, a beech copse actually. Looking around, I mean, there's a 360 degree view here, which takes in an awful lot. Because yeah. We're at the centre, really, of some of our favourite places, really, that we've talked about on the podcast and written about on the blog.
So way off to the west, I mean, that's, I say way off, that's probably 2 or 3 miles away. We can see Colkitchen Hill, and we can just about make out the Long Barrow on the just below the summit, about which we wrote in another blog. Sort of done a couple of walks up there, and then can't quite see beyond this wood here, but if we stepped out from behind the trees, the reason we're in the wood is because it's so windy out here. I might get a lot too much wind noise, so you can probably hear the trees rustling. But if we just step aside, we're
yeah, if you look over where... there, Paul, can you just make out that massive rampart on Scratchbury Camp, Scratchbury Hill?
Oh yeah, yeah, that's Scratchbury, is it?
Yeah, yeah. And then just to the left of the hill, you can see that enormous bowl barrow.
Yeah.
That's actually where we walked with the first Hidden Wiltshire walk up over there.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's the kind of Warminster skyline area there. And you're probably not tall enough, but I can see it at Heytesbury, just over the brow of
If I walk up where you are, yes, I can see it now.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see the roofs of Heytesbury.
So up on the hills beyond there, or you'll be in Nook Camp.
So over to Nook over there.
Yeah, Nook and all over there.
I don't know why we're pointing, because you can't see this, but we're trying to be helpful here and point out all the landmarks. Yeah. We're gesticulating like mad, but you can't see this. But and then if we look, what's that? That's south. We're slightly below the brow of the hill, so we're going to walk along the track a bit in a minute. And then I know from past experience, the views really open up that way as well.
Yeah.
We're actually quite close to it's Summerslade, isn't it? Summerslade Down.
Summerslade, yeah, yeah.
And the Lower Pertwood Farm, the organic farm. So that's maybe half a mile away.
Yeah, you can just see that beech clump on Pertwood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Over there above the rapeseed, which is where a farm worker's buried, isn't he? Or his ashes are.
One of the Deverell's blogs, I took a photograph of the beech clump, and there was it was a roasting hot day, and there was sheep lying in the shade under the trees, and I remember Glenn and I saying it looked like it could have been in Greece or something, but so that's the beech clump we've just been talking about that we can just about see the top of at the moment. But it's looking very different tonight. There's a very threatening looking sky over to the west. It's clouds are pretty dark. I think it'll be okay. It's going to rain, but
it's a shame, because normally if you come up here and the light's good, you can get some fantastic shots of Summerslade and Colkitchen Hill and Brimsdown and all that side of things. It's a bit hazy today, so we can't quite...
I mean, the light is pretty impressive, because it's the sun's sort of... The clouds are low over the horizon and the sun's above it, so it's sort of casting quite deep shadows, because it's coming up to 7:45 in the evening. So the sun's really low. There's some beautiful shadows. But yeah, it's very hazy, so difficult for photography. But I think we'll head on up the track, and then speak a bit more when we find something interesting.
Yeah, let's do that.
So one thing that we learned as we were doing this walk with the museum people, and from David Dawson in particular, was some of the interesting facts about what could be seen from Coal Kitchen Hill. So you can make out there is a long barrow just below the summit. And it's interesting, he confirmed, and we've discussed this before, how long barrows are very often close to the top of a hill, but not always on the absolute summit. They're slightly below. And it's all about two things. One is they are meant to be seen, but the second thing is they're meant to be seen from a particular place, and that place is normally where a settlement would be. And often when you're down at the bottom, you know, you see these false summits, don't you? You don't necessarily see the very top of the hill. You might see a plateau just before that, and that's your summit from the ground, and that's why they're put in that place. But he also mentioned that on the top there was a Roman temple. On Coal Kitchen Hill, yeah. And there's quite a lot of Roman stuff going on in the Deverell Valley, as we've already discussed on you know, at least one of our podcasts. We've talked about the Roman fort. It wasn't a fort, was it? It was a Roman villa.
Roman villa at Brixton Deverell.
Yeah. And there's been Roman artefacts discovered down at ground level, as well as the Kingston Deverell Hoard, which is in Salisbury Museum. So there's a lot of Roman stuff going on in this area.
I think, again, as David was saying, that, you know, because we were remarking on the fact that there would have been a lot more people up on the hills here, perhaps, in than there are now. But as he said, nowadays the people all live in the valleys because water, particularly in sort of Roman and Saxon times, settlements were, you know, they looked for sources of running water and springs, which before that they didn't necessarily do. So the population sort of drifted from the hilltops, and you see these hilltop settlements, and they sort of migrated down to the valleys. Whilst we don't see people on the hilltops anymore, they wouldn't have seen people living in the valleys like we do now.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So after the brief interlude of sheltering in the trees, we wandered further along the track until we hit a crossroads where we had another outside discussion. So we've just gone to the end of the byway we were on, and we've hit a bit of a crossroads actually, so we've got the map out trying to work out where we are, because straight ahead of us we can see the enormous forest of the Great Ridge, but this is a genuine crossroads, because in front of us we've got one road that leads down into Titherington, which is a normal byway, so cars can drive on that, and the other way would take you down to the A350, I believe.
So we're facing sort of south, aren't we? We're facing south. We've got, as you say, Great Ridge across just to our left. So to our at this crossroads, if we were to go right on the byway, that takes us to the A350. As you said, left down to Titherington, and behind us is the way we came up from Sutton Veney. So we're going to head down to Titherington now, aren't we?
Yeah, through this track, which at the moment is gorgeous because it's lined by hawthorn in bloom, lovely white flowers.
Yeah, it's almost like they're covered in snow, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's really nice.
And of course, and it's now 8 o'clock, so about 20 minutes since we were down at the wood just now, and there's not a soul up here.
No, we've had it to ourselves.
There's nobody else as stupid.
Wow.
But you can hear the traffic on the A350.
You can. The wind's far away, are you? The wind's blowing it up. Look at this, some motorbikes running down. So over there, do you see that farm building? There's the trees there. Yeah. That's where on the map there is a settlement marked.
Oh, it's there, right.
It's over there, by those red things you can see by the field. That field there is the settlement.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's nothing to see now.
Well, we'll have to go and have a look, won't we?
Yeah, we'll have to go and have a look. Imagine if you put a drone up, you might be able to see something. Yeah. But maybe some field markings. But it's very remote up here, very quiet apart from the A350.
Yeah. Let's see what we can find.
Okay, so we've come down the hill a bit and stopped at a place that's marked on the map as just settlement. And stood here looking at the field where the settlement is, you can quite clearly see earthworks and indentations in the field, which give away the fact that something was once here. Don't know what, though.
I think I'll try and research that before we do the podcast recording at home. But it's not very big. There's, I think we were just saying that if you put a drone up here, you'd probably see it much more clearly. But it's only, 50 feet from where we're standing. We're just leaning on a gate. There's a sign behind us saying you are being watched. So I don't think we're going to go over the gate and have a look, but there's really nothing to see. We're right on top of it, and we can see exactly what it is. So we're actually on, we're to the south of Titherington Hill, if you're looking at a map. When we leave here, we'll head down into Titherington. Titherington Hill is sort of northeast of where we're standing. I mean, really, just right next to us, and then to the west of us, southwest is Littlecombe Bottom, which we were looking at. So we're about 20 minutes on from the track where we were recording earlier on. We're sort of gradually losing height, but we've got a closer now to Great Ridge. You really get a much better sense of how the scale of it. It's huge, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty much dominating the whole line of sight up here from left to right, like a big spine on the hill.
Yeah.
It's a very large wood. And I think if you look on the far distance there, that must be Groveley Woods over there.
But we were just looking on the map, and we're going to head down to Titherington, but there is another track which heads sort of opposite direction. And that sort of heads pretty much due south, and it crosses the Roman road that goes all the way through Great Ridge. So we're kind of wondering where that leads. So it's clear it goes through Great Ridge, but the other direction where it heads towards the Wylie Valley and the Deverells, I think this is a Roman road that we've talked about before. It heads over to sort of Pertwood Down and Lower Pertwood, and it just peters out somewhere around Somerslade Down and south of Somerslade Down. But any reference to Roman Road or Course of on the map just vanishes. And I think there's some sort of discussion around where that goes, because it, you know, there's a thought that it then sort of picks up again in, I think it's Kingston Deverell, isn't it?
Yeah, Kingston.
But then, of course, there's the Roman villa, huge Roman villa, which is, you can't see, but it's buried at Brixton Deverell. So, again, Roman activity all around here.
I always think it's funny, though, when you think about that, you can see these ancient places in the landscape, at how there was more human activity then with a much lower population in the country than there is now. I mean, these places are abandoned, a lot of them, and...
Yeah, we've got an open-sided barn behind us, and down the hill another barn, and I can't see any other buildings anywhere.
No.
Apart from a bloody great crane over there, but that's over the brow
of
the hill.
So over the brow of the hill, yeah. That must be on the farm. So.
Farm over by the A350, but no, there are two buildings, and then as far as the eye can see, I can't see any other buildings.
But I think, if you look on the map around this area, you've got the huge expanse of the Great Ridge, and the settlements, the villages that are alive today, of course, are much further down the hill, in Titherington and down into the Wylie Valley down there. But up here, it's very remote.
Mm.
Lots of wide open countryside.
But I think we clearly are being watched, because I think the farmer's just driven past and gave us a good look up and down.
Checked us out.
Yeah, friendly enough, wasn't he? Waved and smiled, but... you do kind of wonder, what on earth is he doing up here at this time of night?
Two blokes with cameras around my farm.
Yeah, get off my land. All right. Titherington, here we come.
Titherington.
It's getting a bit chilly now.
It is, yeah, yeah. Now the sun's going down, it's got very cold.
So when we recorded that particular clip there, we didn't know much about this settlement, but when doing the walk, David was able to tell us that actually it was Roman, which was quite a surprise.
Especially as it's not by running water. So it completely confounds what I've just said about the Romans looking for running water, because, again, you look at a map, you won't see any springs or rivers or anything up there.
But the other thing that David pointed out, and this got me thinking because I'm interested in such things, but he turned around and pointed towards the field that's over towards Little Coombe Bottom, and he said that a coin had been found in that field, and the type of coin was called a stater, which was a coin of the, and I'm going to get my pronunciation completely wrong about this, of the Durotriges tribe, which was a...
No idea.
Yeah. Durotriges? I think that's right. But that tribe was a Celtic tribe in the southwest, and their range was really down, the edge of it, it's kind of edging into Wiltshire, but it's 10 miles south of here, down towards Shaftesbury. So it's quite unusual to find one this far north. But again, it just shows you that, you know, that there was trade, the potentially trade going on between the different areas. It's just interesting to find that. And actually, just a few miles south of here, there was a hoard of staters found in Castle Rings Hill Fort, which is a really obscure hill fort that nobody knows about. But it is on the map, and it's on a private land. It's on a farm. Again, that's down towards Shaftesbury Way. Not far from Semley, actually. But back then, it was found by a metal detectorist who was illegally using his detector on this private land. And he uncovered this jar of stater coins and then dug it up. And when it came to light, he was subsequently prosecuted because you're not allowed to do such things.
No.
And in the end, it was declared treasure trove. And I think the coins have ended up in the British Museum. But I know there was a bit of controversy around the time as to whether the museum should be paying for it, because they didn't want to reward illegal detectorists. Interesting story.
So the coin that was found up by this Roman settlement.
Mm.
So the field he was pointing at was sort of around on the top slopes of Littlecombe Bottom.
Yeah.
Again, a note on the map there. There's a disused pit marked. So whether that's contemporary with the coin or much later, I don't know. Because a lot of these pits, these disused pits that we find are, I mean, they would. Quite often, usually dug for chalk. So I don't know. I mean, I must admit, when he was talking about that, I was tinkering with my camera, so I wasn't paying attention. So I wasn't quite sure exactly where the coin was found. I know he was pointing at something.
Yeah, he was just pointing in the general direction. I'm not sure precisely where it was found, but it was just interesting to note that this particular coin had been found quite far north of their normal range of existence, as it were. So from the settlement, you continue your journey down the hill, along the track, as it were, and you go through some areas of welcome shade on a hot day, because there's quite a long string of quite mature trees, and it, you sort of descend into what looks like a bit of a hollowway, until you'll know you're sort of getting close to civilization again, because you start to see a field that's full of show jumping equipment and such like. And
basically what we were looking at there is Downlands Church Farm, and that's really quite a substantial operation, and it looks like a sort of mini industrial estate. But to your right in the fields, I mean, I've never seen so many fences and things for horses to jump over, so it's clearly a pretty substantial operation. And you know, it's not just there, as you said. It's the racehorse training on the other side of the hill. I mean, it's big business around there, clearly. So before we get to Tillington, having come from Downlands Church Farm, it's worth just looking back up the hill, the direction, the way you've come, because you get some great views into both Littlecombe Bottom and I think Haycombe Bottom. I think you can see both from that that track. So that, just to reiterate, that's a track between Downlands Church Farm and Tillington, and it's well worth just pausing and sort of looking up to your left there, because there really are some just beautiful views there, especially as you know when we did the outside recording and the late evening sunlight. It was beautiful.
Yeah, and it's easy to miss because there's quite a substantial hedge there, so it's like finding the gaps in the hedge. I know that when I walked it on New Year's Eve, I was kind of walking along that track around 4 o'clock as the sun was coming down, and it was absolutely beautiful, really picturesque. But then eventually when you come down to the main road, you will come into, we're heading then into the village of Titherington. So as you come down off the track, you sort of go into the right and walking along. You may spot through the trees on the left, if you look closely, there's a bit of a, looks like a mini lake down below the road. And we join up with the other end of that in a few minutes. But just to say something about Titherington, the actual village itself is really picturesque. There's a set of buildings there with a dovecot and an old granary, and it's just, the architecture is quite unique, really. It didn't really look like a Wiltshire village to me. It looks more like Cotswolds or something.
The dovecot you mentioned, David Dawson and I were sort of peering over the wall looking at that, because it's in somebody's garden. They must get very fed up with people stopping to look over their wall. But it's a really striking looking building. We were wondering what it was. So you mentioned granary there. Is that, have you read that somewhere, or are you just making that up?
Well, now you've got me doubting myself. So I don't know. I just, in my head...
David didn't know either.
Yeah, in my head, I just thought granary.
It makes sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've probably read it somewhere.
There's like those sort of vaults. There's three vaults at the bottom of it. Because it's obviously pretty extravagant just for a dovecot, because it's quite a tall building. I mean, if there were floors in it like a house, it would be like a five-storey building, I think, with a dovecot at the top. But at the bottom, there was like three vaults. It's the only way I could describe it. Because I was sort of thinking, well, maybe they were ovens to dry the grain in the granary above. But as David rightly said, well, no, because you could see the brick would be burnt, and it wasn't. So it's probably just to elevate the thing, to keep it off the granary, off the floor, to keep the grain dry.
But one thing that was interesting on the dovecot is, as I looked up at the top of it, I could see a white dove. So they've obviously found their home. But after that building, if you walk a bit further along, you'll come to the church. And again, we had a few words to say about that from our outside recording.
So this is a rather nice church. Church of St. James, Titherington. Founded prior to 1083, this church and a dwelling for two chaplains was endowed by the Empress Matilda, mother of King Henry II in 1140. To the passerby, this ancient church is a witness to the spiritual facts of life and a silent reminder to those who pass by that no life is worthily lived that neglects its duty to God. Its worship is simple and reverent. It aims at lifting the thoughts of men and women away from the harassing things of the world to the high and holy things of Jesus Christ. To those who need a haven of rest and worship and have not found it, this church stands, as it has done throughout the ages, to welcome you. And I'm willing to bet it's locked.
Yep.
Oh my God, there's a RAF thingy there.
A400M.
Atlas,
yeah. Apart from that and the birds.
Yeah.
That's all we can hear, even though we're standing in the middle of the road.
Yeah.
So should we go and have a look and see if it's locked?
Yeah.
Beautiful church though, isn't it? I mean,
it is, yeah.
Very simple.
Yeah. No, it's locked.
Have you ever been inside it?
Never, no. I've been past about three or four times. Every time I've tried the door, I've not been able to get in. Yeah. So. I think that sign should be done under the Trade Descriptions Act.
Yeah. Who do we complain to then?
God.
It's obviously very old.
I think it's, although it says it's founded prior to 1983, I think this particular building is a lot later.
But
I don't know the exact date, but it's much later than...
But it's almost sort of single story.
Yeah.
Now, I know absolutely nothing about church architecture, but it's, I want to say, sort of Saxon, something like that, because it hasn't got the normal sort of square steeple or the cone-shaped steeple.
It's very, it's certainly old. Certainly old. Maybe 12th century, I don't know.
Mm. We need a proper historian, don't we?
We do. Not a fake one like me.
No. Or me.
I think it's one of these things that we'll check when we get back to the office.
Yeah. But I think you took a photograph of this, didn't you, and put it on the...
Yes, I have,
on your blog. So.
Yeah.
The thing I love about this church is the bell.
The bell, yeah.
The external bell. It's just hanging in a little housing, the cross above it.
It's very well kept. I mean, the grass out the front is very manicured.
We need to find out who's got the key.
I know, we do. Or maybe just rock up for a service.
Yeah.
I think they have two a month or something. Anyway... on this part of the walk now, you're going to turn back on yourself and go back up the road towards the sort of dovecot area. Because on the right-hand side there's a footpath that takes you through some fields, which will take you on a sort of backdoor route to Sutton Veney that avoids the main road for quite a bit. And actually, where you get to when you go to the other side of that field and drop out of it is the most wonderful water feature. And again, we recorded our views of it when we were out there.
It's quite a loud sound of gushing water here. Very wet, isn't it?
Yeah, so if you need a loo, go now. We're just a couple of minutes from the church in Titherington, and we're following the path back to Sutton Veney, and it sort of tips us out. We've crossed a field full of buttercups and to this track. It looks like you're in somebody's back garden. So you've got a little pond here, beautiful pond with this little sort of waterfall weir tumbling down to our left and goes under sort of a really old stone bridge under the track. And then where does it go? There's a little wooden bridge down there. And I guess this water here goes on down to Sutton Veney.
Yeah, that's a stream that leads down that way, and obviously there's some more water over there.
A pond over there.
Yeah.
This is stunning, isn't it?
It's just so pleasant, yeah.
Not often you find something like this so near a...
And the water looks crystal clear.
Look at that.
There must be a spring around here, mustn't there?
Yeah. Where that pipe comes out, it's obviously been put in later, but you look at the brickwork around that. I mean, that looks really old, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And here it's just built of stones. The bank's made up of stones. Yeah, lovely.
Yeah, it's nice.
So as you mentioned earlier, this piece was recorded at the northern end of the lake that you mentioned earlier on.
Yep.
And you know, it very clearly is. I mean, is it one person's garden or a couple of gardens? But it sort of weaves its way back and forth across a sort of driveway, a gravel track that connects two or three cottages. So it is the most sort of idyllic little spot, isn't it?
It is, especially with the sound of the water.
Yeah, exactly.
Going through the little stream, the water's very clean and clear, and there was a swan there with cygnets when we were last there. It was very, very nice. But after you carry on the walk, you come out onto some fields, and it's quite interesting because this next stretch, which leads to the old church at Sutton Veney, the old collapsed one. Well, the first time I did it, I just thought, well, it's just a nice walk through a field. I had no idea there was so much ancient history in those fields. And the first thing you see as you come through onto the first field, as you look to the right, is an enormous barrow, a bowl barrow, which on the map is called the Knoll. And then if you carry on to the next field, it's not so obvious, but there is a long barrow in that field, which I think we weren't sure was still going to be visible, but it was clearly there, wasn't it, in the edge of the field.
It's a bit overgrown, but that's just this time of year.
Yeah, and having David with us, he was able to explain what had been found inside. And actually what came to light was that there was a particular body that had been found inside that had a kind of fairly catastrophic injury on its head, because the poor chap had had his a sword basically slashed across the front of his skull.
I think that was the mortal blow. I think prior to that, David was saying he had one sort of jabbed in his a knife stuck in his cheek, went sort of right through his cheekbone and underneath his eye socket.
Yeah, so he'd already had a fairly major mouth injury that he survived, but the mortal blow was the sword going into the front of his skull. And I think this guy was in his mid-20s. So he was obviously a bit of a battler. But the interesting point he was making is that the way that he was buried in there was not like you normally see Neolithic burials in a Neolithic long barrow. You know, he was in some kind of a coffin. And it's... But what David was saying is that, generally speaking, the school of thought now is that that chap was probably a medieval burial, not ancient. And it just goes to show that a lot of these old barrows were used over a long period of time for burials. So it wasn't just built for one person. They were like mini cemeteries and used and reused over centuries. And then after we had talked about the barrows and stuff in the fields, actually you get great views from there across to, you know, the barrow on the edge of Scratchbury Camp, because you can see the hill forts in the distance. We ended up in St. Leonard's Church, or what's left of it. We had a nice discussion as we were actually stood there in the churchyard and explaining what we could see.
So it's almost dark.
Yeah, 9:25.
It's pretty close to, well, I think the sun has probably set.
Yeah.
But we're just here in St. Leonard's Church in Sutton Veney, which is pretty much abandoned now because it started to fall down in the mid-1800s, and they rebuilt a church up on the high street. So this one was left to wreck and ruin, and part of it has collapsed.
Seems bizarre, doesn't it? I mean, sure, it's cheaper to repair this one rather than build a new one.
Yeah, but I think it was subsiding, so I think it was a case of they'd have to knock the whole thing down and start again, and the ground was on soft ground, so they just abandoned it. And it's now owned and managed by the Church's Conservation Trust, who they do open it during the day, so if you come here before 5 o'clock, you can usually get in and have a look, because they've got some interesting things inside. But if you follow me around here, I'll show you something interesting, which is the only example of one of these things I've ever seen in Wiltshire.
Yes, and I know what it is. But
let's not give the game away just yet.
No, I've never seen one before or since.
No. And they'll explain why you don't see them very often, because I did read up on it. But over here, covering a flat gravestone in the ground is a metalwork which seems to be made of wrought iron, covering the whole grave, and it's the only example we've been able to find in Wiltshire of a mort safe. So the mort safe was put in to prevent anyone digging into the grave and stealing the body, because back then they were in the days of the body snatchers who would steal them to sell them to medical students.
This location is, I've only been here a couple of times before. I mean, if you didn't know it was here, you would never find it.
No.
I mean, you can't see it from anywhere other than when you get in here, because it's completely surrounded by a screen of trees.
It's not even on the road. You have to c- come off at the end of what is a cul-de-sac and walk up a track to get here. So there's no road or parking. It's very out in the sticks.
So you've got the bit of the church, which has actually got a roof. And again, it's
That bit looks intact.
Yeah, and that's again very simple building though.
Yeah.
And then you've got a bit in front of it, which has got no roof and barely any walls.
Yeah,
and
this bit you can see the walls have become misshapen and the roof's caved in at some point.
But this looks like an old abbey, doesn't it? You could be in one of these Yorkshire abbeys.
It's quite a large structure, isn't it, for the size of the village?
Looks like a mini Tintern Abbey.
Yeah.
Oh, there's the door.
Yeah, so the door's... This section here with the door is fully intact and it looks like it's been refurbished. Because it's got
They must have relocated the door at some point.
Yeah, they must have, because that looks like they've bricked that in and put some fresh lintels in for the door there.
Yeah, the door surround there is much newer.
Yeah.
Beautiful sort of honey-coloured stones, like Cotswold stone, isn't it?
Yeah, it says here that the church on this site was started in the 12th century, revised in the 13th and 16th, and underwent a major restoration in 1831.
I'm just looking through the... There's a little grill and a door, and you can see in. It's very small, isn't it? It's tiny. The bit that's left.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it says here that even though it was renovated in 1831, it was abandoned in 1866 because the ground here was very unstable. It must be damp ground. Yeah. And when we walk back down there, you'll see there are little spring streams out on the road, so it's probably subsided. Yeah. So they moved to higher ground up on the high street.
Oh, that's interesting. There's a little QR code at the front here. It says it's now possible to download an audio tour of St. Leonard's on your phone.
Oh, they've still got the beer inside there, because it says only the chancel remains in usable condition. For a period it was used as a mortuary chapel and the beer was used to transport bodies to St. John's.
Beer as in
B-I-E-R. B-I-E-R, to carry the bodies.
I was getting all excited there. Yeah,
you and your pubs, eh?
Yeah. Although there is a very good pub in Sutton Veney, I would add.
Yeah. So it does say here, from May 1970, it became a redundant church and was vested into the care of the Church's Conservation Trust in October 1971.
But the churchyard is stunning, because they've sort of mown paths through it, but otherwise it's been wild. Left to go to a sort of wild garden. So it's a great sort of profusion of wild flowers and grasses. And all we can hear is a blackbird at the moment.
And, very peaceful place to visit, anyway.
Yeah. But it really does look like a sort of mini Tintern Abbey or Revelow Abbey.
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah, definitely reminds. It's got the vibes of Revo.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
So after the church, there's just a short walk from there back to the High Street. Passing some very, very nice houses, actually. It's another very picturesque village, I have to say. Before doing a little bit of a trudge along the High Street back to the beginning of the walk where we started, back at the church on the High Street. So there we are. So where are we going to be in 2 weeks' time then, Paul?
Well, I think we're going to do a slight departure and we're going to look at... Wiltshire clumps, our favourite clumps.
That's a new word for our listeners.
Yeah.
Clump.
So, well, they'll have to find out in 2 weeks' time, won't they, what it is.
Yes, indeed.
They're not unique to Wiltshire, but we seem to have more than our fair share, and Wiltshire is well known for them. So that's the plan.
Excellent. Well, look forward to that in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah.
So, usual wrap-up comments, Paul?
Yeah. Thanks again to Steve for the music. So today, a new piece is actually called Belief. Belief. See what he did there?
Yeah.
He spelled it B-E-E and then L-E-A-F. It's Steve's little sense of humour. But, another... I actually dug up the other day about 6 tracks that he'd sent me, which I'd forgotten to listen to. And there's some great new stuff in there. So, Belief, that one. Otherwise, again, website for show notes and various links.
Okay, and we shall be back in 2 weeks' time. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.